Thanks for listening to The Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because
the charcoal mess. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking.
Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute.
No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
All right, this show brought to you in part by SimpliSafe. If you have 30 minutes, you never have to worry about break-ins ever again. Just go to simplisafe.com/Adam. Get all the sensors you need, all the help you need as well to set it up. Custom systems going to show up post-haste at simplisafe.com/Adam. The great Mike Rowe returns for a very intimate and insightful one-on-one. We'll do that in the second half. First, there's Geico. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything? Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Mike Rowe's Birthday Cocktail Party for March 18th. Let's see who's invited. Let's welcome the 22nd and 24th President of the United States, Grover Cleveland. Here's the inventor of the diesel engine, Rudolf Diesel, and he's pissed off about the price of fuel. British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain is here. The guy who invented the gas mask, Clooney McPherson. Actor Peter Graves is here. Country singer Charlie Pride joins us. Wilson Pickett will show up in the midnight hour. Vanessa Williams is here. NFL wide receiver Andre Rison. Michael Rappaport just walked in. Dane Cook. We welcome Queen Latifah. And the singer for the Alan Parsons Project, Eric Wolfson. Mike Rowe is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, Dirty Jobs is coming back for a 10th groundbreaking season, which is being shot now. It'll air on Discovery. And Mike's got a bunch of series, also a podcast, The Way I Heard It. I was honored to be a guest on last month. Good to see you, Mike Rowe.
Great to see you back, Adam. How's tricks?
Tricks are good, and I always look forward to speaking to Mike Rowe because I feel like we're kindred spirits, although our backgrounds aren't really the same. Our backgrounds are quite a bit different, but I think we kind of ended up in the same place. Your background is performance and theater. I'm also reading here you were an Eagle Scout. Let's talk about that. Let's give the audience your background in theater. And I believe musicals as well, right?
Look, I mean, it's a crooked road, man. I grew up on a little farm north of Baltimore City, and there was a hill that I lived on with my mom and dad, my younger brothers, and next to us were my grandparents, Carl and Thelma. My granddad, now there's a guy you would know, not by name. It was Carl Noble was his name, but he built the house I was born in without a blueprint. And he only went to the seventh grade. He became a master electrician, steam fitter, pipe fitter, welder. He could take your watch apart put it back together blindfolded. You know, he was that guy. He had the chip. He was sort of a hero in the community, the guy you called who could fix or repair anything. I worked as his apprentice for a couple of years as a teenager. But the handy gene, to my eternal surprise and regret, is recessive. And I just didn't get his natural ability to fix stuff. I was sure I would eventually, but it never really came easily to me. And so he was the guy who pulled me aside. I was 17. I had just bitched up a concrete pour. We were working on a patio at a church. Anyhow, he said, "Look, Mike, you can be a tradesman if you want. It's just a state of mind, but do yourself a favor and get a different toolbox." So I wound up going to a community college. I studied all sorts of things I wasn't really interested in, philosophy and math, and acting, singing, all of that stuff. And I kind of crept into it. There was also a high school music teacher who sort of grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and cured a stammer that had plagued me most of my young life, forced me to sing in a barbershop quartet because he was like a big deal in the barbershop world. And and there was a scoutmaster too, a former lieutenant colonel who made us do skits and made us memorize long poems like The Cremation of Sam McGee and Dangerous Dan McGrew and all these crazy old songs that we'd have to sing around the campfire. And I just eventually found myself more interested in doing things I didn't think I would enjoy. It was really, I think I said this to you once before, but it was that the summer when I was 16 was the summer I realized just because you loved something didn't mean you couldn't suck at it. And a few years later, just because you weren't really into something didn't necessarily mean you might not be good at it. And ever since that basic lesson sunk in, I kind of hit the reset button and Forrest Gumped my way into the industry that you and I both occupy today.
Yeah, it's not discussed enough, the things that you can do versus what you should be doing. Or, we kind of understand the Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan, but he wanted to play baseball, but he was really more suited for basketball. But somebody who works as hard as he could have some life as a baseball player, but not nearly the life he would have as a basketball player. And we kind of do a thing in society like, look, if you love it and set your goals and everything's achievable. And it's just, it's not really, if you're not cut out for certain things. And I learned that lesson as well. And I did a lot of sketch and improvisational comedy. I couldn't do characters. I couldn't do voices. I couldn't do accents. And after years of doing it, I was like, well, you can do this. You can do it, but you're never going to be great at it. So why not find some other version of a sport? Like it's all under the heading of sports, but within sports, there's, hockey and basketball and baseball, like all the different sports. Find a sport that you could excel at within the heading of, athletics. And
but that's the thing, right? So I grew up not far from Cal Ripken. We played soccer together, and there were a couple of pickup games of basketball that we played together. And this guy was devastating. He was a devastating athlete, right? He was great on the basketball court. He was unbeatable on the soccer field. But as it turns out, his obvious gift, was to play 2,100 games in a row in Major League Baseball and set all kinds of records. So he had to choose the right sport in the world of sport. Where it gets interesting today is, when you're that was a course correction for Cal. Mm-hmm. For me, it was like, no, dude, wait, you cannot do any of the things you thought you were going to do. You can try, but you're not going to make money in the construction trades. And it's kind of like, you know, this is how I ran into Dennis Prager, actually. I did a commencement speech for PragerU that talked about this exact thing. And I liken it to American Idol. Not the winners, but the 20,000 people who show up, many of whom are in their early 20s, absolutely convinced they have a shot at winning this thing. And not only do they not win, but they learn, in many cases for the first time, in front of a national audience, that they can't even sing. Like they can't even carry a tune in a bucket. But for some reason, their entire lives, they've been encouraged to follow their dream and pursue their passion and stay the course. And don't let anybody tell you you can't do it. And it drives me crazy, Adam, because you can turn on the Grammys, you know, any broadcast over the last 10 years, and there's Cher or Lady Gaga or fill in the blank, you know, holding their trophies and looking into the lens and telling millions of people, see, it's possible. If you just stay the course, if right. you just dream a little harder, your dreams can come true. And that's just such an awful load of crap. You know, there's absolutely no reason to think that your dream and your abilities are going to somehow coincidentally line up. You know, sometimes yeah. they do, sometimes they get close, but a lot of the time, yeah. no,
well,
man.
It's mathematically impossible, like reincarnation, which is I was a nobleman, you know, and I was a queen, and it's like somebody shoveled horseshit. I got news for you, somebody,
right?
Somebody's coming right. back with a flathead shovel in their hand and flies around them. Like you couldn't have all been nobility. The ratio of serfs to nobility was already outrageous back then. Now, right. so I feel the same way about the dream. The dream is, you know, it's a math. It's if you would like to work at McDonald's, anyone can work at McDonald's. I worked at McDonald's. Most seems like, oh, many successful people I speak to, their first job is like at McDonald's. So there's no barrier to entry if you want to work at McDonald's. If you would like to be Pavarotti and a famous opera singer, then there is a barrier to entry. Or Cal Ripken, there's only so many shortstop jobs available in Major League Baseball. So the more mathematics are fighting against you, because the loftier the dream, you know, I'm going to win Top Gun Pilot of the Year. Well, mathematically, there's only one plaque that's delivered once a year, and we got 330 million people in this country. So now the odds are against you. And then we've been filling your head with this, you know, high self-esteem movement bullshit where we're telling every kid dream and, you know, you could be Oprah or the next president of the United States. And well, then your dreams, reality is going to set in. You're not going to achieve that. And then you're going to be disappointed. And then you'll be that waitress that nobody wants because she thinks she should be somewhere else instead of bringing you ham and eggs. And it's a recipe for disaster. What should be delivered is you can have a lot of happiness and a lot of satisfaction in life with your family, with a skill, with your faith, with your community, and just with pride, working hard, job well done, sense of accomplishment. There's a great life waiting for you out there with that. And there are many successful poets and actors who've killed themselves.
That's exactly it. The problem with job satisfaction is that people think it's a function of the job. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's a function of the person, to your point. You know, if being a poet made you universally satisfied, then Sylvia Plath probably wouldn't have stuck her head in the oven, you know? And it's also tricky too. You know, this comes up all the time with my foundation. We award these work ethic scholarships, and it's very, very difficult to, you know, evaluate a person's work ethic, especially on an application. But part of the reason we're in such a fix, in the country, I think, is because you look at American Idol as one path. I mean, we actually put the word idol in the show, right? It's so you can become the very best of the thing, the wish fulfillment, the embodiment of your dreams. But over here at McDonald's, to take your example, people tend to look at that as the only rung on the ladder. It's okay, would you like fries with that? And that's what you're going to do at McDonald's for the rest of your life. But the truth is, the overwhelming majority of people who own those franchises started by saying, would you like fries with that? And those people are prospering. And so the idea that you are stuck if you're a McDonald's worker and that's your lot in life, the idea that if you're an apprentice on a construction site, that's as far as you can go. The idea that, okay, you're a welder, right? We've assisted something like 700 welders get their certification. Some of them right now are making low six figures, and they are going to be welding 20, 30 years from now, and they couldn't be happier. Others have advanced their certifications and are now making 300 grand a year welding underwater, doing really difficult, highly risky, but amazingly artistic projects out of sight, out of mind. And others, and these are the ones nobody ever talks about, they took their welding certificate and they got pretty good at it. And then they picked up a plumbing certificate and then they got pretty good at that. And then they got heating, air conditioning, you know, HVAC. Then they bought a van, hired a couple of buddies who were similarly credentialed. And now there's a mechanical services company with a dozen employees and three vans. And that all happened because somebody somewhere said, yeah, I'll learn to weld. I'll push a bead. Would you like fries with that? And so we can't just narrow these things down into these super skinny verticals and perpetuate the notion that just because you're doing a thing means that's the thing you're going to do till the end of time. It's crazy, but a lot of people put themselves in that box.
Yeah, well, I guess the immediate gratification with the sort of shortened attention span hasn't helped that. And again, your job isn't to be special. Your job is to be happy and contribute. You know, I think everyone thinks I have to be special. I have to make my mark. And also, and I bring this up from time to time because I experienced it in my own life, there is a sense of happiness that comes with a sense of satisfaction when you try to do your job, which you may not enjoy currently, like working at McDonald's, to the best of your ability. It changes your entire posture, and your mind changes as well. And I always tell the story of I was a carpenter who wanted to be a comedian, and there's nothing, you know, there's certain jobs, like you could be a singing waiter and want to be an actor, and maybe there's some connective tissue between those two. Like when I taught comedy traffic school, I felt like, okay, there's some connection between standing in front of this group of traffic offenders and standing in front of a group at a nightclub. Like I could build a bridge to that, but it's really hard to build a bridge between doing comedy and hanging sheetrock all day silently. But I immediately got happier when I just decided this is my lot in life and this is what I shall be doing for the foreseeable future. And I'm going to do it as best I can. I'm going to get organized.
It's a huge relief when you limit your options. You know, I used to think all the time, man, I would be so much better if the Discovery Channel would just let me do whatever I wanted to do. If Dirty Jobs could be anything I wanted it to be. But the truth is, for me anyway, that blank page and the potential, the possibility to make anything you want, that didn't really help me a lot. What helped me a lot was understanding what the Discovery Channel was in 1998, 93 when I started there, and what they were in 2003 when I sold them Dirty Jobs, and what they are today. And so, you know, in 2003, every show was super similar. Like, there was always a credible insider. There was always a host who talked in a crisp, well-modulated baritone. And there was a predictability to their programming. Same was true of QVC years before that, where I got my first job. You know, I was surrounded by people who were doing the same basic thing in the same basic way. So all I really had to do to be different, or in some people's opinions, irreverent or subversive, all I really had to do was be a little different. I didn't have to be outrageous. So on Dirty Jobs, I just said, look, I'm not going to be a voice of authority. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to defer to the people I'm working with. I'm going to let them be the expert, and I'm going to be the avatar. And, you know, to your point, for me, the big shift came when I said, wait a second, I've been freelancing as a host for 20 years. I was doing okay when I was 43 years old and started doing Dirty Jobs, but it didn't really turn for me until I said, what if you're not really a host? Or actually, the question was, what if you're a better guest than you are a host? And what if you start acting that way? And suddenly, a new format was born, and that show has been on the air every week for the last 20 years. Mostly, I think, because I stopped trying to do it the way everybody told me I had to do it. And it's those little distinctions, I think, and the way you see yourself. You know, you said there's no great bridge between being a carpenter and being a comedian. And I think that's probably true at a glance, hammering nails and telling jokes. I guess we could probably torture the metaphor and find something there. But the mindset, Adam, I mean, tell me if you disagree, but to me, when my pop said, look, you can be a tradesman, doesn't matter what you do, that was one of those light bulb moments, because I was like, oh, shit, he's right. You know, I don't really care about the underlying trade. What I was enamored with was the idea of jobs that had a beginning and a middle and an end, jobs that would allow me to travel, jobs that would allow me to freelance and eat what I killed and, you know, make enough money to be comfortable and have enough time off to do what I wanted to do. And that's what most of the tradespeople I know do. They set their own schedule, they decide on their own identity, and they go to where the work is. So, yeah, for me, there is a bridge between carpentry and comedy, and it's your state of mind. How do you see yourself, as a jobber or as an employee? And, you know, one answer, in my view, leads to something like drudgery, and the other leads to something like freedom. So, yeah, it's an important question to kick around.
You brought up beginning, middle, and end, and I was just on the phone with Dr. Drew a couple hours ago, kind of discussing the importance of beginning, middle, and end. And I don't think it's something that's really discussed, which is the beginning, the middle, and the end, and the process of then a new beginning, a new middle, and a new end. And it used to be pretty ubiquitous. If you were a horseshoer, or you worked at a logging camp, or you framed barns, there's just a beginning, a middle, and the end. And we now live in a society where there's a lot of people that are just experiencing one long middle, and and they're dissatisfied, and they should be. Like, I think when you get a job where you're just sitting in air conditioning and you're in a cubicle and you're just sort of processing an endless amount of data that never really has an end, I think it's leading to a lot of the psychosis that we're having as a community. Just the blue collar world is a very tactile beginning, middle, end And you get the satisfaction of saying, like, I have an idea. You know, maybe that idea is to build a treehouse, but maybe that idea is to build a bridge or whatever that idea is. And then at some point, you start sketching out a plan and what this thing may look like. And then you put together a list and you go to the lumber yard. And at some point, it's done and you crack a beer and you step back and you look at it. And more importantly, at some point, some couples come over for a barbecue and they admire your treehouse and they go, geez, who'd you get to build that? I want them to come in. And you go, I built that treehouse. You have a beginning, you have a middle, and you have an end, and the end kind of keeps going because the end, you get trophies for the end. That's all the books you've written are up on the shelf of your office or your gold record or whatever that thing is, or your welding certificate, you know, that's framed and on the wall, the office, like that's an end. And we're now in a digital world that doesn't have a beginning, a middle, and an end for so many people. And those are the people that seem least satisfied.
Absolutely. Look, people ask me all the time, what do dirty jobbers know as a group that the rest of us have forgotten? And the honest answer to that's a 400-page book I can't get around to finishing. But one of the chapters for sure, we'll talk about the fact that your office, where you're sitting right now, looks pretty much the same at 5 a.m. as it does at 5 p.m. I mean, this place that doesn't change, right? So I've got no visual cue in my life to tell me when I'm done. Dirty jobbers do. They don't need a foreman to tell them how they're doing. They don't need progress reports. They don't need focus groups. They don't need any of that. They can look around and they can see how they're doing constantly. And it's that level of feedback that is weirdly addictive. Once you get used to it, you know, and again, I don't think it's unique to the trades. Anybody can find it, but it's a hell of a lot easier when you're building a tactile thing. But I'm not sure it's so different when you're telling a good joke either. Like, Henny Youngman told jokes. Lots of people tell jokes in ways that elevate the punchline. And you can hear them rushing to the punchline. It's like a bad date. You know, you need to take the time, open the door for her, pull out the chair, be interesting during conversation. Open the door back when she gets in the car, come home, maybe light a candle, pour a drink. Way leads on to way, and who knows, maybe it ends in a happy exchange of fluids and maybe it doesn't, but you can't just rush to the end. Norm MacDonald was such a great comedian because he spent a lot of time in the middle, you know? He found ways to make the middle fun, and you could see him. I mean, even in his ubiquitous, what is it, the moth story, and so many others, you know? This is going to be a shaggy dog story. And once you sign on for that, you don't really care what the punchline is because you're watching a tradesman build something right in front of you. A different kind of tradesman. But I didn't know Norm, but I always thought of my pop when I watched him do his thing because I could see him building it as he went. And it was fun to watch his progress. And if you can figure out a way to do that, whether you're in McDonald's or McDonnell Douglas, then you win.
Yeah, you know, I never really thought about the other aspect to the trade, which is, you know, as you said, you know exactly how the progress is going because you could look around and you can see exactly how it's going. You know every step of the way how it's going. And it also eliminates the ability of the supervisor who has it out for you, and then he's going to show up and say you screwed up the Jenkins account when all he wants is that promotion, or he's jealous of your girlfriend and he wants to hear that. You remove all the politics, mostly politics that people manufacture as an excuse to get out of, well, you know, Herb never liked me, so of course he's got a problem with my work. But you can't have a problem with a welding bead. It's either
right.
You can look at a weld, even a lay person can look at a great weld and look at a bad weld and look at everything in between and label it and go, that's an excellent weld. That's a horrible weld. You can do that with the hanging a door or putting baseboard or crown or casing up, drywall, whatever. It's like you can, there is no arguing with it. It's there is no, my boss is jealous and that's why this weld sucks.
It's either plumb or it's not. It either fits or it doesn't, right? And so there's a simplicity to that. But, you know, I mean, we were, what you said before, I keep coming back to the binary thing, you know, the McDonald's or, you know, the carpenter or the comedian, the this or that. I don't know if you'll remember this, but in 2016, the Republicans were having their big debate, like 17 people up there on stage. And at some point, I don't remember what led up to it, but Marco Rubio said, you know, what this country needs are more welders and fewer philosophers. And I got thousands of people in social media saying, hey, man, did you hear that? This guy's singing your song. And I said, you know what? He's not, actually. I don't mean to say that our country needs more of one thing and less of another. I think, really, it would be nice if we had more philosophers who could run an even bead. And I think it would be nice if we had more welders who could talk intelligently about Descartes and Nietzsche. And it doesn't have to be one or the other, but we're constantly given examples that suggest you can't do both, but you can. And you know, when you and I went to school, we didn't have this thing, this iPhone and this, you know, internet connection, spotty though it may be, but we've got access to 98% of the known information in the world. And I say it to the welders we train all of the time. I'm like, look, man, don't stop being curious about things you don't think you're interested in. Keep learning stuff, for God's sakes. Otherwise, you know, you're going to become tiresome. I don't care how good you are at whatever your chosen trade is.
Well, you know, I guess we're kind of talking about being what we used to call a Renaissance man. And I think we all understand that. We all kind of like, at least historically, we like the notion of a Renaissance man. And I agree with you. Let's have the welder who's curious about philosophy, and let's have the philosopher who's can, you know, I don't know, fix their intake manifold on their F-150 with a bead of weld. But I'm wondering now if we've gotten away from the Renaissance man theorem. I wonder if we're so into specialization now, and we give so, it's so coveted, this guy can do this one thing better than anybody else, and thus we will hail him as a hero. First off, the Renaissance man is, there's a lot of happiness in that because it's got a lot of balance to it. You know, like people would say, when I used to be a carpenter, they'd say, oh, everyone who worked in an office would say, what I wouldn't give to be outdoors and work and take my shirt off and work out in the breeze, you know, with nature. And then what I would say is all the guys on the construction site would love to get some air conditioning and a coffee pot down the hall and a bathroom with a door on it. Like, you don't get it. These guys would all like to move. And so then the answer is well, what's better, working outdoors in the sunshine or working indoors in the air conditioning? And the answer is doing both. The answer is being in the office for 4 hours in the air conditioning, and then going outside and working up a sweat.
Yes.
That's the happiest. The happiest, it's not that one is inherently better than the other. They're just different, and that's where the variety kicks in. So that, in a sense, that is being a Renaissance man.
Of course. Look, I wish there were something new to say about this. I really do, because I don't, you know, everything in moderation has been around for, you know, millennia. It's like the best advice in the world we've become weirdly suspicious of. Mm-hmm. And the worst advice in the world has been accepted as conventional wisdom.
Right.
And we just try and outfox ourselves at every turn. I mean, what's your favorite meal? What's your favorite thing to eat?
Yeah, I was about to bring this up. I would say barbecued ribs, but not more than 2.5 days in a row. Then we got to get some sushi.
Well, how about 2 years in a row? How about 20 years? I mean, there are a lot of reasons, I think, that people are not satisfied with their jobs, but that's a big one. It's this idea that, my God, are you really going to do the same thing in the same way, day after day, week after week, year after year? I don't care how glamorous it is. But to our earlier point, if being a rock star were some sort of guarantee to happiness, well, then you and I right now are each doing a very quick mental inventory of all the rock stars who have killed themselves or blown themselves up or become just patently miserable. You know, if being a celebrity was really the key to some level of happiness, can somebody explain Johnny Depp and Amber Heard and what the hell happened there? And I mean, this is an obvious thing to say. And I hate myself for saying obvious things, but it just feels like that's what needs to be heard right now. You need to do it all. Get out of your, whatever you think your comfort zone is, that's a place that's going to slowly wring you dry of anything that might be confused with ambition.
I want to ask you about the general demeanor of the folks you encountered in Dirty Jobs, and I'll tease it because I got to do a spot here, and I'll front load it by saying I toggle between the sort of blue collar world and then the artistic world quite a bit in my day to day. And mm-hmm. I go talk to the other guys who are mechanics who are working on my race cars. And sometimes I'll go talk to the guys who are doing the home improvement jobs or whatever it is I'm working on. And then I go talk to the creatives in another building. And there's a lot more sense of ease amongst the mechanical guys. They're a comfort in their own skin. Less just in general, there was no COVID talk, for instance, versus mm-hmm. Versus the artists, where there's a lot of COVID talk. The mechanical guys, it was like it wasn't happening. We just talked about whatever the job we're working on. Now, there's not a glee in what they do. There's a quiet satisfaction that gives you a sense of the people being sort of purposeful and centered, you know, versus sort of dangling in the wind and, oh, we had a great day because I got this phone call from such and such, and then we're having a horrible day because I got another phone call from somebody else that said something different, you know, the next day. And so I started to put together this theory that I think that the people that work at their hands have this groundedness that prevents them from having these wild swings one way or the other. But I'd be curious of your composite of the average guy you encountered in Dirty Jobs. I'll tease that. First, I'll tell you about and the through lines sort of psychologically. Sure. That were held within those gentlemen and ladies. First, I'll tell you about Tommy John. Dad, saved your butt countless times. Return the favor with the new Tommy John underwear. Dads agree that you can get a lot more comfortable, and when you are, everything is better. Breathable, lightweight fabric for 4 times the stretch of competing brands. Tommy John doesn't have customers. They have fanatics. Over 17 million pairs sold. I'm wearing my Tommy John's right now, would not leave the house without them. And especially if you're up on your feet and you're working and you're moving and you're working a little lather up, you've got to go with Tommy John. It's the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guaranteed. Am I right, Dawson?
This Father's Day, shop TommyJohn.com/Adam for up to $30 off site-wide plus free shipping. Now through June 15th, get up to $30 off site-wide plus free shipping at TommyJohn.com/Adam. TommyJohn.com/Adam. See site for details.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Back with Mike Rowe right after this.
Available now for pre-order, Adam's sixth book. Everything reminds me of something. Advice, answers, but no apologies.
It's insane. I blame everybody but me.
Adam drops knowledge, rants, and laughs, answering actual questions from you, the listener, and some celebrity friends. Follow the link at adamcarolla.com to purchase on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or through IndieBound to find your local independent bookseller. Everything reminds me of something. Coming this summer, wherever finer books are sold.
All right, Mike, I set up your question about the people you encountered with dirty jobs, by and large. And what was their mindset that seemed to be repetitive or through line that they all seemed to possess?
Well, they all wore Tommy John for one thing.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it was Shakespearean, Adam, honestly. It's like Richard III, right? Or was it the fifth? We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. There was sort of a tacit understanding among sewer inspectors and roofers and skull cleaners and electricians that if they all stayed home for a week, they knew that polite society would go off the rails. They knew it. And even if this was really, I'm talking about before Dirty Jobs right now, when there were no shows that really celebrated that, one of the first things that I saw when we really dug into it was that they were okay. You know, they were okay not being celebrated. Many of them had kind of made their peace with the fact that they labored out of sight and out of mind. And so I'm generalizing, but it was that awareness that they were contributing in a way that was visually undeniable that allowed them to see with their own eyes that they were moving the needle. The creatives that you talked about before the break, it's harder for them to know empirically that they're making a difference. For one thing, so many people want to be creatives, and so they know that there are people standing in the wings waiting to replace them the moment they screw it up. Your mechanical buddies, on the other hand, there are not as many people, back to your mathematical point, there are not as many people who can do what they do. And part of the trick in your question is that those mechanical guys are as artistic as the artistic guys, just in a different way. So when you think about the way in which we removed shop class from high schools, for instance, I think this is really interesting. And you're old enough to remember, before it was shop, it was the vocational arts.
Mm-hmm.
Like the art was actually in the title of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the art out of it, and that left vocational education. And then we shortened that to VOTEC, put a hyphen in there, which is always the kiss of death. Mm-hmm. And then we started calling it shop. And then we walked it out behind the barn and shot it in the head. And so we got shop class out of high school. We created all kinds of problems as a result of doing that. But it began by arbitraging the art out of it. And so, you know, why are your mechanical buddies slightly better adjusted than your creative friends? I think on some level, it's because they know that. They haven't stopped looking at themselves or their work as artistic, and they know it. And it's something that a lot of other people have forgotten. We don't use the word craftsman the way we used to. We use words like, you know, tradie or jobber or help, you know? So I part of it has to do with a general understanding among dirty jobbers that they're moving the needle. Part of it has to do with visual competence, right? These are competent men and women, by and large, who can prove their competence very quickly. And that leads to a level of confidence. And that, I think, is what you see in your two divergent groups of friends.
Well, imagine,
it's a question of confidence.
Yeah, well, imagine the anxiety-inducing version of this, which is, I'm now old enough and white enough and heterosexual enough where I you know, I talk to some of my contemporaries in Hollywood and they're like, hey man, I'm white, I'm old, I'm straight. There ain't no jobs. They're not, yep, they don't need me. They don't need me. I'm gone. I mean, imagine how much anxiety that would create. Your person in your 50s, you've got, you know, 25 years experience in a business. And because you're white and male and heterosexual, it's like, no jobs on Netflix for me. And
sorry.
Obviously, that's going to induce some anxiety. Now, the other guys who are, one guy I think of in particular, Sean, is just a very, very skilled fabricator. And I just love a fabricator, real world-class fabricator. You know, builds stuff for my race cars that don't exist because a lot of the stuff was one-off and then he has to recreate it and blah, blah, blah. He has no anxiety about being put out to pasture as a world-class fabricator, regardless of his sexual proclivities. He's in demand. Mm-hmm. There's only so many of them. And he knows, yep, it. And he knows he can walk across the street and get a job. You know?
That's my point.
And
he had.
Right. So obviously there's going to be a sense of security that is not going to provoke the anxiety. And in terms of the fabricators, it's a meritocracy. When it comes to Hollywood, it's whatever du jour. I don't know. Who do you know? What do you look like? We're looking to fill a few boxes with this ethnicity or that group, and you could be left out of that. So it would cause anxiety in any profession if it was based on things that went above your – that had nothing to do with your skill set per se, and your skill set, yes, couldn't really be measured even because it's – again, we can see the right. My 15-year-old son can tell you the bead, if a bead is good on a weld or not, and he's never been around a heliarc or MIG or a TIG. But the other, and I'm going to shift gears here just quickly because I'm seeing you doing your show How America Works, which is on Fox Business Network, and I see you pop up on Tucker Carlson and other Fox programs. I've been relegated to Fox programs as well because somehow my weird homespun pragmatism has made me some sort of leader of the Trump parade. I don't know what happened to just talking about, you know, morals and ethics and hard work and, you know, how grandpa used to do it and how we used to do it in this country. When did that make you some NRA gun-toting right-wing, you know, Hannity's bosom buddy? I don't know why mm-hmm. the left needs to do that. I know there's a kind of a snobbery that has to do with college versus welding school, but I don't know when it got so political. I look at you as one of the most reasonable thinkers I've ever heard in my life, and I should see you pop up equally on CNN and on Fox, and I would say the same for Dr. Drew or Mark Garagos or even myself, except for we've all been thrown off of CNN for saying, I'm not even sure what, for just not agreeing with insanity.
Look, part of it has to do with the fact that everybody wants to be able to look at a weld and immediately know that it's good or bad. But metaphorically speaking, you can't do that with people. You have to actually talk to them. You have to peel back the layers. And you have to, if you're genuinely curious and intellectually honest, you have to listen. And then you have to form an opinion. And then you have to at least acknowledge the possibility that the cognitive dissonance you're feeling might not be the enemy of reason. And you can therefore be friends with somebody who might not agree with you in every imaginable way. So I think a lot of people in our industry are now looking at guys like you and me, and lots of people as well, and immediately concluding that guy can't weld, or that guy can, or he's a this or he's a that. Okay, he's white, or maybe he's Latino, he's married, maybe he's single, maybe this, maybe that. And we are falling over ourselves to sum up in a way that we shouldn't, because people are a lot more complicated than a seam in a metal box. But we just have lost our nuance. I had a show on CNN for 3 years. I mean, I've been on MSNBC plenty of times. I've been on NPR more times than I can count. I've been on PBS. I remember one week, Adam, when things really started to shit the bed. This would have been 2016. I was out promoting our work ethic scholarship program. And to be fair, I was hawking whatever other shows I was involved in at the time. I always mix my peas with my carrots as best I can. But I was really leaning into the foundation's work and trying to reach new audiences. So I went on Bill Maher, and we had a great conversation. Spoke for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. Touched on unions a little bit. Touched on some things that he and I don't necessarily agree with. But by and large, we had a really engaging, civilized conversation about the changing face of the modern day proletariat, right? The increasingly vague definition of a good job. And then 2 days later, I had the exact same conversation with Glenn Beck down in Texas. And when I got home, I opened up my Facebook page, which at the time had about 5 million people on it. And holy crap, dude, I almost said I've never seen anything like it, but unfortunately I've seen a lot of things like it, you know, in the last 6 years. But that was the first time I saw my buddies on the right completely come unhinged, because they saw me sitting next to the wrong guy. Bill Maher was the wrong guy for me to be sitting next to. And the optics alone were enough to render a million of my friends, my supposed online friends, render them incapable of hearing what I was saying. And of course, when I popped up on Glenn Beck 2 days later, the exact same thing happened. All my buddies on the left, how could you? Mike, how could you sit next to that foaming racist? How could you have a conversation with him? How could you put your imprimatur of nonpartisan decency in your foundation? Blah, blah, blah. It was the same. It's not the fact, Adam, that it was the same thing on both sides. It was the fact that it happened so fast within a 48-hour period that was the moment I realized, uh-oh, something really has happened. It doesn't matter what you said to Dennis Prager. It doesn't matter what I said to Dennis Prager. Problem is, you and I were both spotted working with Dennis Prager. And that's enough to render us irrelevant to a big chunk of the country. But, you know, last week I was on PBS. And, you know, I work for the Discovery Channel, which, believe me, is not exactly a bastion of conservative thought. And happily, we still get along okay. But I don't know where it ends. And this, obviously, there's not much new to say about cancellation that hasn't been said. But man, I know it's happened to you. It happened to me last week. You'll love this. I had a Dirty Jobs show set up with three boilermakers in D.C. And we had spent 2 months researching this. We had gone in, we'd done some pre-production, we'd shot some things, we got all the permissions. The boilermakers were working in a facility that was under the purview of the GSA, or the Governmental Services Administration. So we needed their permission. We needed permits. We applied. We got the permits easy. No fuss, no muss. That was 2.5 months ago. The crew went back multiple times to make sure everything was squared up and ready to go. The night before I flew in, my production team got a call from somebody we hadn't heard of at the GSA who pulled the permits. And we said, why? And they said, security reasons. So what kind of security reasons? I mean, this is a non-secure building, for one thing. Secondly, we were in the basement. I was going to be working inside of a giant boiler. I mean, there's no state secrets down there. But they said, we're really not at liberty to discuss it. And we said, well, this is a real problem for us. We've spent time. We've spent money. I got a crew who freelances. They took their day off and so forth and so on. And they're like, look, this came down from the highest levels. It's non-negotiable. The permits are pulled and you cannot film here. So I didn't think much of it, except it was an extraordinary display of bad manners more than anything else. We'd done everything right and somebody somewhere decided, I mean, what are you going to do? The government says there's a security concern. But then we got another phone call about 8 hours later. And I've got the names of the people. It doesn't matter, but they're not coming out of the blue. This guy called, identified himself, and said, look, here's what really happened. Somebody over here, way up the food chain, has some sort of problem with something Mike did or said. I'm not sure what. Maybe it's his new show on Fox. I don't know. But this was a deliberate attempt to yank his chain, waste his time. And that's why the permit was pulled. And again, I'm trying not to feel paranoid about the whole thing, but I'm looking back at dirty jobs. I'm looking at what we've done over the years. I've been in super secure locations. I've got permits from the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Seabees, the Coast Guard. I've shot at the NSA. I've shot in super sensitive places, in nuclear reactors, on an aircraft carrier with nuclear weapons on it, in the weapons room. But no, we can't risk you in the basement of some ordinary building outside of D.C. celebrating the work of boilermakers. So now you have to decide what to do about it. You know, whine about it, you can complain about it, and I'll bitch to you about it. And I wrote something on Facebook about it. But mostly you just put your head down and you keep going.
Yeah.
But look, you have to ask. You have to ask this. If you're going to mess with me, Mike Rowe, a guy who's producing a show that is just giving a shout out to America's boilermakers, we're keeping the lights on, literally, in D.C. If you're going to mess with me because I have a show on Fox Business or because I said something on Facebook that you didn't like, then what are you going to do with an RFP for $20, $30 million that you got to bid out and you have to go through a dozen vendors? You know, I mean, you're the government. You can do anything you want. You can go to their Facebook pages. You can make a call. How many people have been disqualified from doing good, honest, nonpartisan work because they were spotted sitting next to the wrong dude or sent out the wrong tweet? I have no idea, but I'd wager the answer is a freaking bunch.
Yeah, it's sad. The sad part is the sort of punitive part of the whole thing, which is you showed up on a Dennis PragerU video, and now you must be punished. It's the and now you must be punished part that's the insane part. But the most insidious part of this entire thing that we're talking about, this chapter we're in, is so many people remaining silent because they quietly agree with the thing that's insidious. Which yes. is, well, it's kind of, it's our side that's doing it, so I'm not going to say anything. Like, it's the most un-American thing you could do. You want to talk about McCarthyism. This is it.
I tell you.
And yeah. You guys are sitting around. I'm not saying you're cheering it on. You're just kind of looking the other way. There's basically Mike Rowe is being raped in an alley, and you just shut your window and went back into your apartment and turned the sound up on the late night show you're watching.
I think a lot about Hans Christian Andersen and his, the Emperor's New Clothes. And there's a lot of that, right? I mean, otherwise reasonable townspeople standing around looking at the emperor, who's stark naked, being paraded around, acting as if he's fully clothed. You can, you know, you can look at the weasels who convinced the emperor that he wasn't naked, and you can blame them. Or you can blame the emperor for being so vainglorious and having such little spine, he allowed himself to be carried around naked. But you really do have to look around at the townspeople too and yes. say, what are you doing? Why are you all nodding in quiet agreement that this naked dude has great clothes? It took a kid. It took an 8-year-old kid to go, hey, that dude's naked. You know, I wrote something the other day and I didn't publish it because, you know, I don't need any more trouble. But when the whole Leah Thomas thing came out, you know, I had a friend who has a kid, like a 6-year-old kid.
The swimmer, there transgender swimmer. Yes. Go ahead.
Yes. There was a photo of her standing, receiving her medals, wearing a one piece. And it was clear, I mean, never mind her height and her wingspan and all the other, you know, obvious traits one might associate with a genetic male. She had a penis, Adam. You could see it.
You could see it. I know.
Right? I know. Right, so this is a, you could see it. So like millions of people are standing and looking at this woman. And it took my friend's 6-year-old to literally say, mommy, that lady has a penis.
Yeah. Well, the emperor's new penis.
So now it's awkward, right? Now, wait, gosh, that's embarrassing. But why is it embarrassing? Should he have said it? Shouldn't he have said it? What's the parental object lesson in this whole thing? The townspeople are nodding. And out of the mouths of babes comes the most obvious thing in the world. And now, you know, Matt Walsh has his movie out. If you haven't seen it, right? What is a Woman? You'll see it. It's going to break some eggs. It's going to upset a lot of people.
Yes.
But
I'm with you in the metaphor that it's the townspeople, not the emperor, not even the kid, and not even the lackeys that are in proximity of the emperor. It's the townspeople. Yeah. That's who, as someone who lives in the town, I'm worried about the townspeople. I'm not worried. Yeah, you know, COVID, it wasn't Biden, it wasn't Trump, it wasn't Fauci that worried me. It was the guy you passed in the street jogging on the horse trail who yelled at you to put a mask on. That's the guy who worried me, not the people setting bad policy. Let me give a plug here, Mike. Dirty Jobs, it airs on the Discovery Channel. Season 10 is shooting now, but you can go out and find it. And you should find his podcast, too, The Way I Heard It, which is, well, you just heard Mike Rowe, so you should hear his podcast as well. And then How America Works on Fox Business as well. You shoot him. Go to his Instagram page at Mike Rowe as well. Mike, it's always the fastest hour of my day speaking to you. And you're always a joy to speak to. And I'll be happy to come back in any capacity you'd like on any project you'd like as well.
I want you in every capacity, Adam. I want you on all the shows I'm working on. It's much simpler when you're in my life. All
capacities. The great Mike Rowe. You can go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows coming to Denver June 24th and 25th at the Comedy Works South and then everywhere. So just go to adamcarolla.com for all that. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Mike Rowe saying mahalo.
That's not legal, so she had to say it because I was sleeping and wouldn't hear her girl by all her detaf as on my side, getin vusud eor.
You can watch this episode of the Adam Carolla Show at youtube.com/Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And get your tickets to see the Ace Man. Get them now at adamcarolla.com.
Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would.
And who doesn't love a deal when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything? GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with GEICO. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to GEICO. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
the charcoal mess. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking.
Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute.
No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.